Let's get your latest tech news with Fevzi Turkout from Gadget Detective. You've come up, as ever, with your Gadget of the Week, Fevzi, which we'll discuss in a few moments' time. But let's talk about the tech story of the week, which involves robots.
Okay, can I have a go at QPR?
Oh, yeah, go on, go on.
Queries, problems, resolutions.
Right. I mean, that sums up this half an hour segment, doesn't it? I mean, that says it all.
I think so.
Yes, it does. Excellent.
Okay.
Very quick work, by the way. Yeah.
Oh,
so talk to me about robots then, because this is all to do with Elon Musk, isn't it, this week?
Yes. So, you know, big companies have to speak to their investors on a regular basis and they give them the heads up about where the company's going and what's important. So Elon Musk, as well as doing rockets, does Tesla vehicles, the electric self-driving vehicles, and very popular and clever they are too. Lots of artificial intelligence built into them. Mm. He told his investors at a Tesla earnings call that the robots designs had the potential to be more significant than the Tesla cars over time, not this year.
Yeah.
But he also said that it would be the most important thing that Tesla worked on this year would be robots, which sounds a bit strange because you've got rockets and you've got cars. But the cars, self-driving cars, are robots.
Yes.
They meet the definition. They don't, not humanoid robots. They don't look like humans, but they are, to all intents and purposes, robots. And he's got a project named Optimus, which I think is from Optimus Prime, isn't it?
Yeah, which is what a Transformer, isn't it? Yeah.
I think so. And it's quite interesting. And he said initially the robots will be used in Tesla factories. And it's quite interesting because the number of robots in factories as a percentage of human workforce is going up every year. And, there's been a lot of talk in this country, around Brexit and so forth about how British jobs are British people and we're worried about Europeans taking our jobs and all that sort of thing. And people are kind of completely blind to the fact that what will be taking their jobs will not be people from other countries, it will be robots.
But haven't robots formed a part of factory work for decades already? The forms of robots anyway, surely?
Yeah, absolutely. What's changing? So there's two things that have to change with robotics. One is the intelligence that's built into them, their capabilities.
Yeah.
And the other is the physicality of the robot and its dexterity and so forth. Now, both of those have come on leaps and bounds. If you go onto the internet and type Boston Dynamics dancing robot, you will see some amazing things that human dancers couldn't even do. Quite amazing. But also in terms of the intelligence is getting better. So even without physical form, jobs will be replaced that were not previously replaced. So before we were talking about certain types of manual labor. Now we're talking about accountants, solicitors, doctors, judges, surgeons, these sorts of things.
I'm trying not to sound too alarmed by that, but I mean, it's slightly worrying, isn't it?
I tell you, in the interim it is because, like, for example, there was a crash of a Tesla car a while back.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it looks like the Tesla car was at fault. And there's all this legal framework question about who is now to blame. Right? Is it the person who owns the car? Is it the person who was sitting in the car but not driving it at the time? Is it the designer of the software? Is it Tesla? So there's all those things. But that's a transitional period.
Mm.
Those cars are probably already about as safe as the average human driver, I would think. In the future, robots and robotic services will be safer. So when you're up for surgery, God forbid, if you were, if you're poor and can't afford it, you will have a human surgeon. Otherwise, a robot will do it. And it will do a better job of it. It will have a steadier hand. It will be able to, use scanners beneath the skin to know exactly what it's cutting into and all the rest of it. And it will do brilliantly. When you have a judge judging us, it will be more consistent. It will be less.
But it wouldn't be able to make a judgment based upon nuance, surely.
Well, you know what? I think there's a history of this, right? Human beings have got this particular frailty that we think we're unique. We are unique, but we're not necessarily that special. We're apes with opposable thumbs who are very slightly smarter than other apes and have done rather well for ourselves. This is the truth of it. And it's quite interesting because our ego has defined the way we define intelligence, right? So when going back decades, they used to say, well, if you can teach a computer to play chess, then it will be intelligent. Right? So then they taught one to play chess, and they said, oh, if it can beat a human, then it will be intelligent. It's easy just to teach it. Mm. So then it beat the human. Then they said, well, if it can beat a grandmaster, then it's intelligence. So it did that. It beat a grandmaster. And then they said, well, chess isn't really a measure of intelligence, is it? Let's move on from it. And we keep defining intelligence of the other, that which is not us. Intelligence can take many forms. Some of it will be human-type intelligence. Others will be different. But things like consistency, I'll give you an example. IBM has got an AI program, an artificial intelligence program called Watson. Mm. And Watson's quite interesting because it can learn to be an expert in many different things. And the way that it becomes an expert is by consuming huge quantities of data.
Yeah.
So for example, Watson can be used to diagnose cancers. And the way that it's taught, it's really the way that we learn from experience. So you'll give it a million scans of people who unfortunately did have cancer.
Mm.
And then you give it a million scans of people who were cancer-free.
Yeah.
And it works out the nuance, to use your word, of
right.
What is it that all the cancer scans have in common? And that's not easy. Yeah?
No, it's
that's
not.
That's not an easy thing. You couldn't write computer code to tell it
no.
A cancer looks like this, any more than you can use computer code to tell a computer a cat looks like this.
Mm.
Because a cat can be many colors and can be viewed from many angles, many shapes, many sizes.
Yeah.
But we have no trouble doing that, right? Because no one has programmed us with definition of a cat.
Yes.
We've just learned from experience. So the point is that not only can Watson read with nuance the scans, Watson, I nearly called it he,
mm-hmm.
It can do it better than a human specialist. And having diagnosed the cancer, Watson can then, bearing in mind the DNA of the patient, work out a specific bespoke treatment plan for that individual based on their genetics, their health, and all the other factors. They can take into account far more. They will have seen far more scans than the top consultant will ever see in their whole career, and they're learning quite fast. Now, that's what's called narrow AI. It's doing one task really well. Driving a vehicle is also a form of narrow AI. You can get a robot to cook preset menus. That is narrow AI. The problem is general artificial intelligence. The problem is getting someone to do what a human can do, which is play chess 1 minute, then make a cup of tea, then tell a joke. You know, all these disparate activities that we just switch between seamlessly and adapt to, they're not very good at that yet. And I think that's the next big challenge. And it's not even certain that we'll be able to manage that. I believe we will. But it's not just, oh, we need it to be, you know, just a bit faster or a bit better at what it's already doing. It's going to need some major leaps forward in the technology of artificial intelligence. But I believe it will come. I believe it's inevitable because, you know, the human beings have hardly changed over millions of years. You know, we don't evolve. Our children are not, you know, generationally smarter than us, but each generation of computer is smarter and faster and more capable than the previous generation. And the gestation period for those generations, and I'm starting to use biological terms here because I'm thinking in terms of them becoming life, yeah? They can replicate themselves. It's one of the things about life. One of them is, you know, intelligent life should be sentient and it should be able to reproduce. Increasingly, computers are designing the next generation of computers. Even the chip in your phone has billions of transistors in it. A human being can even draw those in a lifetime. Those chips can only be created because computers are used to help design them. And increasingly, they will design the whole thing. And then instead of taking a year or 18 months for a new generation of computers, that will drop to a month and a week and a day. And can you imagine how much more capable they will become than us in time?
Really interesting. Listen, we'll leave the robot chat there. Fevzi Turkout from GadgetDetective.com is with us, talking us through now his gadget of the week, which is something I'm after, actually. So I'm all ears for this, Fevzi, because wireless keyboard has very much bitten the dust. So I'm looking for a new one. And you've been researching one in particular.
Yeah, so this is a advanced illuminated wireless keyboard. So we've talked about, you know, robots and computers controlling us. Now we control them via a keyboard. It's called the Logitech MX Keys. Logitech is a brand. Logitech has sort of carved out a niche for itself of making really high quality accessories which rival those of the bigger manufacturers. And in fact, my opinion is that this is possibly the best quality computer keyboard available, and in my personal opinion, higher quality than the ones that come with Apple computers,
which are
always deemed to be. This is not cheap, by the way, and we'll come to the price, but it's called the Logitech MX Keys. It's a full-size computer QWERTY keyboard with a numeric keypad off to the right, very nicely spaced. The keys are, they have proper travel, but they're not the big clunky, clacky type that used to get on keyboards before. Although those are quite popular with gamers, you know.
It's
strange. They tend to like those. I don't know why, but I think it's... These are fine. This is what's called a chiclet keyboard, which are these little shallow keys. But despite the fact that they're shallow and don't have to have a huge amount of key movement, the keystrokes and fluid, natural, quiet, and you still get a good tactile response. And the key tops are domed inwards, so as your finger touches it, sort of matches the domed shape of your fingertip. So it's really nice. It's a backlit keyboard. But it's more than that. The keys light up as your hands reach for the keyboard.
Wow.
As you go to type. Yeah, it's great because one of the things that kills the battery on a wireless keyboard is the backlight, more even than the wireless bit of it.
Okay.
And this is really good because it comes on when you reach for it. And it goes off when you move your hands away.
Clever.
It also has an ambient light sensor, so it can tell how dark the room is and therefore set how bright you want the backlit keyboard to light up, although you can override it, but it does it itself. It's got some rather clever tricks. This keyboard is good either for people who spend a long time typing, and therefore it's, you know, a good investment if you spend a lot of time at a computer, or for people who want to control more than one device. And by device, I mean this can control a Windows PC, it can control an Apple Mac, it can control an iPad, an iPhone, a Linux computer, or even an Android smartphone.
Okay.
And there's two ways you can do that. You've got three buttons, so you can just press 1, 2, or 3 and control different devices. So let's say you've got, an iPad and a Windows PC. It can just switch easily, seamlessly between them. But if you get the matching mouse for this and you load up the software, what they call the Flow software from Logitech, you can do something really clever. You can move the mouse pointer across the screen of, let's say, your Windows PC off, let's say, the right-hand edge of the screen.
Yeah.
And then the mouse pointer will appear on your iPad screen.
Oh, that's clever, isn't it? So you can have a bank of screens in front of you and it can move from one across all the way across to the other.
Yeah. And it's very smart because wherever your cursor is wherever this keyboard will then be typing into. Or, for example, you could copy and paste across computers by just tapping, let's say, a folder on your Mac and then paste it into the desktop of your Windows PC or your tablet. So it's really, really quite clever. But the ability to control multiple devices without having to have multiple keyboards clogging up your screen is great. And particularly if you've got an iPad in particular, and also an iPhone to a lesser extent, these devices are now, the operating systems in the iPad, OS has come on leaps and bounds, and it works with a mouse and keyboard really well now. You know, originally iPads were just touchscreen interfaces, but now you can do a really good job, and it makes a huge difference just typing notes into an iPad on a screen that is not the screen that comes up on, you know, on a keyboard that is not the comes up on the screen.
Okay.
So it connects either via Bluetooth or by a little bespoke dongle that comes with it that slots into a USB socket. And the reason why that's important is that some computers don't have Bluetooth, but also some computers, like, mentioning no names, Apple's Mac Mini, have appalling Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, because they have these beautiful aluminium cases, it makes it very hard for the Bluetooth signal to get out. But if you pop one of these little dongles in the USB socket, you're golden, as they say. It will work really well. So all of these different operating systems, up to three different computers, on a single charge, it will work for 10 days if you use the backlight, or up to 5 months if you don't. That's okay. Why I say that it's important. All in all, so our price, recommended retail price is penny short for £120.
Yeah.
I saw it on a well-known retailer's website today for £83.94, which I think is a very reasonable price. 4 stars out of 5. Well done, Logitech. Keep it up, because I really like the fact that Logitech also, they work with manufacturers like Apple and so forth to produce some of the kit that they do. The only thing that it doesn't have that I would love it if they'd put in a future design is a fingerprint reader. So some Apple keyboards, for example, not the standard one, but you can pay an extra £50, you get one with what's called Touch ID. So you just touch your fingerprint on the button and it unlocks your computer, or it confirms a purchase. That, and we have that on iPhones, and you know, we have Face ID and stuff like that. It would be lovely if they managed to build that into one of their keyboards in the future. So 4 stars out of 5, very good rating, but still room for improvement.
Brilliant. Right, if anyone wants to find out more top tech advice, where can they go, Fevzy?
Well, I have a podcast called the Gadget Detective Podcast. Thank you so much for generously allowing me to plug it. If you're at all interested in tech, and you don't have to be an expert, but you just want to know a bit more, you can just download the Gadget Detective Podcast anywhere you get your normal podcast.
Yep.
Or you can do it on an Amazon Echo by saying her name.
Yes.
And then saying, play Gadget Detective Podcast, and it will play you the latest one.
Well swerved by not saying the name and therefore setting off smart speakers across Berkshire. It's almost like you're wise to this, Fevzy. That's Fevzy Turkout from GadgetDetective.com.